is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Good morning. Welcome to Medicine on Call. Today I have a very special guest, and I'm honored that he is taking time to come on the show. This is Mr. Joseph Meyer. He's the president of Meyer & Associates and the founder and president of Straight Money Analysis, which is his financial newsletter. And people should go to straightmoneyanalysis.com and start educating yourself. I wanted our theme this year to be some, you know, more about what we can do to help ourselves. We know there's a problem out there with the medical system. And I'm sure everybody's been watching the news and all these statistics that have come out about our economy. But for me, it doesn't seem to jibe. It's like a cognitive dissonance. They're telling us how awesome it is. We have, you know, basically zero jobless rate. Everybody's happy. But I'm not seeing that on the ground. And I wanted somebody who was nonpartisan, who knows this system in and out, who's worked in it for over five decades, and is an expert to come on and answer some questions that personally I have and friends have about what's going on in our society. And I thought the best person to do that would be Mr. Meyer. So, Mr. Meyer, I want to thank you so much for coming on. I can't tell you how happy that you're on my show.
Good morning, Elena. Thank you and Medicine on Call for having me as your guest this morning. It's a pleasure to visit with you and your listening audience. Thank you, Elena.
Oh, you're so welcome. Look, let's get started. I mean, we're a nonpartisan show. We talk about the facts and what's best from a critical thinking perspective. And there's been a lot of rhetoric about free trade agreements. I've read some of the TPP stuff, and I'm just appalled by it. But on the overview, what is the deal with these free market treaties? And they don't seem to be helping the United States. So if you can give us a little bit of a take on what you think about NAFTA and TPP, et cetera.
Well, these trade agreements, as you know, have been going on for many decades, and they're basically very unfair, and they continue to take the jobs out of working class America, and we continue to see the economies of the world affected by them. It's going to take many, many years, I believe, to reverse the policies that have been put into place, and it's going to be very painful as we go through what needs to be done to correct these problems.
Were they set up that to put America at a disadvantage? I mean, who's standing to gain? Is it the developing countries? Is it corporations? Or is it really the individual?
Well, I think we have to put into perspective these trade agreements have been part and parcel of trying to secure the cheapest worldwide labor at any cost, and they've succeeded in doing that. We've continued to see the cheapest worldwide labor move throughout the various different countries of the world, and this is something, again, that's been very unfair, and it's been a very uneven playing field.
It certainly seems that way. It's as if our standard of living in our system has dropped to the national, or I should say the international standard. I saw this kind of under, maybe about 20 years ago when we started talking about globalism and how we needed to, bring everybody in the world up to our standard, but it seems it's been the opposite effect.
Well, I think that statement is very true and very accurate, and I think simply we couldn't bring the rest of the world up to our standards, so we brought our standards down to the level of the rest of the world. That's the way I see it.
Me too. And, when you think about the movement, the migration patterns, especially from the Middle East into the Western societies, especially in the United States right now, is that really what's going on with this? It's a cheap labor. It's not really about humanitarianism. Is it about cheap labor?
It's about cheap labor, and Elena, it's also about massive profits, and I think those two things go hand in hand, and people fail to recognize that fact.
So these profits are corporate profits, I assume you're talking about?
Yes.
And this is actually a separate question. I'm not sure you can answer it, but in your opinion, how did the corporate interest become so powerful that they could override sovereignty?
Well, I think, again, you have to go back. You have to understand history. You have to understand what this country has been put through and what continues to this day as we speak. You know, we started to see the changes in America start in the late 1960s and through the 70s and 80s, and we put into motion a priority where corporate interests certainly overtook the interests of the average American and certainly, more importantly, working-class America. And it's taken many, many decades to wind up where we currently are. But I think when we talk of the bigger picture, we currently have about 48% of Americans below the age of 30 that now rightly believe the American dream is dead. I don't believe for a minute the American dream is dead, Elena, but I do believe it's been very badly wounded.
Is there anything we can do to reverse this?
Well, I think we can reverse it. I think we have to get back to the basics of what made this country at one time very great. We have to be able to allow people to earn a meaningful living, to educate their children, and certainly prepare for the things that are ahead of us in all of our lives. And more importantly, we have to look towards the goals and the principles, again, that made this country great, and we have to get back to what once worked and get away from what's not working. I think that's simply what needs to be said.
So, you know, if I'm a small business owner, and from my perspective, the small business owners are the ones that are going to be able to do what you just described. I can't see corporate interests at this point giving up their bottom line to increase pay scales and improve, working conditions from a salary standpoint. We don't really have competition, it looks like. I mean, from a health perspective, what I've seen is, you can answer the question from a business perspective, but monopolies have come online where it's too big to fail. There's huge hospital systems. There's only a few big transnational insurance companies, and there's not a lot of choice. And the private market, doctors, independent, health-related services have been pushed out, put out of business, or bought out. How can, from a business perspective, am I on the right track, or is that something, do you think small business is really the answer here to break this cycle?
Well, I think you're on the right track, and more importantly, as you know, small business has played a very integral part of what we've witnessed in the growth area of this economy over many, many decades. 90% of the businesses created in America, as you know, are small businesses, and they've never been under more stress and more pressure than we've witnessed over the last two decades. We have to get back again to what's worked, and we have to get away from what has not. The changes are going to be painful, but they have to be made, because if we're going to have a future in America, we just cannot continue down this road. I just don't see us continuing.
Well, be more specific if you can. What has worked? What is the things that we've gotten away from that we need to get back to?
Well, I think we have to get back to when honesty, integrity, and the truth truly matter, and we have to get back to, again, the things that once made America great, and we have to get away from this mentality of, there's something for nothing out in the marketplace, and we'll continue to seek out the cheapest worldwide labor, and we'll continue to sell the cheapest made products. We once made the greatest products in the world, and we can once again make them. It's just a commitment of corporate America to bring these jobs back from overseas and build the plants and equip them in America and retrain the people here so they can work in these plants and once again earn a meaningful living. That's the way I see it.
So those politicians who've said manufacturing is gone, never to come back, get used to the new normal, that really is a load. That's basically a load of bunk, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
So from our tax perspective, the way it's set up, the structure of it, I mean, I'm paying double taxes as a small business owner. I don't really have enough capital to expand because I'm just paying taxes 24/7. And I've read statistics that 47%, about less than half the country, are not paying taxes at all. Is that actually true?
Well, I think we've got a lot of people not paying taxes. I think when you talk about unemployment, we certainly have far more people unemployed than anyone wants to admit. We have the labor participation rate, as you know, back down to the levels we once saw in the 1960s. So this is telling us that people have dropped out of the workforce. They're not interested in certainly working these low-paying jobs. 60% of all new jobs created since the last recession are entry-level positions paying less than $13 an hour. We also have major retailers now closing stores at an alarming rate. Consumers, again, as you know, Elena, are now over $11 trillion in debt. 50% of all student loans at 347 universities and vocational schools are now in default. Small business ownership now at the lowest level has ever been recorded. Since 2008, our national debt has increased by $9 trillion. And again, as you know, Elena, in 1980, our national debt totaled just $1 trillion. We have a $19 trillion national debt. So it's going to take many, many things. I think it's going to take a number of years to turn the situation around. Quite frankly, I don't think it's going to be easy. I really don't.
So I want to tease apart what you just said, because this is two diametrically opposed positions if you're looking at the two parties running right now.
Yes.
You know, and we've done the Keynesian thing of, you know, give more money to the government so we can dole it out to everybody, which is, it makes absolutely no sense to me. But what is Keynesian politics, in your opinion? To me, it's just a giveaway to the government, but I'm not a professional. So if you can just tell my listeners what that really means, since it's what we've been doing, isn't it, for the past, 8 years at least?
Well, you know, we were supposed to see supply-side economics. We were supposed to see, as we've been told many times, the trickle-down theory. We have not seen the wealth trickle down as we were led to believe it would. We've seen money go into Wall Street and go into the banks, and it has not found its way into the pockets of the average American. I think this is why we have the socioeconomic problems we're facing in this country today. We now have 56% of all Americans that now have subprime credit. The purported economic recovery, and I've called it an illusion from day one, will go down in the history books as the weakest economic recovery since the ending of the Civil War in 1865. Economic prosperity is a statistical illusion, and I believe it's a cruel joke for many Americans. I can't say it any straighter than that.
Who started it? Was it corporate? Was it government? How did we get on the slippery slope from having an economy that created something, you know, material-wise, from a manufacturer standpoint, to nothing? I mean, I remember back, in the 80s, when we had all this internet boom and all these companies that didn't make anything being overvalued.
Very true.
I mean, how do we get to this farce that they want to call an economy? Because there's nothing of material that's made.
Well, because we've built bubbles within the economy. We had a dot-com bubble. We had a housing bubble. We had a stock market bubble. But when you take a look at the bubbles, yes, they created initially some jobs, but they were not sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there isn't an industry in America that can even begin to put back the massive amount of people that are now unemployed. Did you know, as a physician, that suicide has now actively surpassed car accidents as the number one cause of injury or death in the United States? You know that, Lena?
Wow, no, I didn't know that, and that's frightening. That means the hope is gone for most people, even though they're trying to tell us everything's awesome.
I think for most people, quite honestly, they've given up a long time ago.
So when we get these statistics, and I know that they're kind of pieced together, when they tell you that the unemployment rate is, 6% or whatever it is, what do you think the real unemployment rate is? Because I know they stopped counting people who no longer look for work.
I think if we go back and we use the measurement of unemployment that we had used as a yardstick going back to the 1950s, the true unemployment rate, Elaine, is probably well over 20%.
Wow. On that note,
that's what I believe.
That's really sad. And on that note, let's take a break. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
Affordable health insurance was the promise of Obamacare, but for many, the government mandate caused more problems than it solved. This is Dr. Elena George from Medicine on Call, and I want to tell you about a truly affordable alternative allowed under Obamacare, Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare bypasses doctor and hospital panels, giving you the freedom to choose. And with a maximum of $500 out-of-pocket per person and 100% coverage up to $1 million per year per occurrence, you can rest assured knowing you and your family are protected. Coverage starts as low as $107 per month and also includes dental, vision, pharmacy, and holistic care. Liberty HealthShare puts you back in charge of your health. Visit them online at libertyoncall.org. Again, for a true affordable alternative to Obamacare, visit libertyoncall.org or call toll-free 1-800-714-6993 today.
Obamacare is failing. We all know that, but you need to know why and what you can do to get us back on the right track. Visit us at ObamacareWatch.org. This is Grace Marie Turner of the Galen Institute. Join us at ObamacareWatch.org.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
Do you have problems with sinus pain and pressure? Do other people smell things that you don't? Have you lost the joy in eating because food just doesn't taste like it used to? Is your nose always stuffy no matter what you do? Maybe you have sinus or nasal polyps. These are generally benign growths that occur from chronic sinus infection or allergies that are either undertreated or have not been treated at all. At Peachtree ENT Center, we specialize in minimally invasive balloon dilation sinus surgery and correction of a deviated nasal septum and turbinate reduction surgery that can be done in the office. We use a state-of-the-art equipment so that you can see the problem. You will be a partner in your care, and together we will decide the course of treatment. We believe in old-fashioned medicine, where we take the time to fix the problem, not just medicate the symptoms. You can rest assured that all options will be offered before surgery is recommended, because Peachtree ENT Center is where patient care counts.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. Today we're having a conversation about economics, a real conversation, not what they want you to believe, but what actually is. Because I firmly believe that you can't make a conscious decision unless you know all the facts. It's hard to find them, frankly. You really have to go and do your own due diligence, because if you stick to what you're being told, you would just think everything's great. And Mr. Joseph Meyer is my guest today, and we're talking about the structure of our economy and how we got here. And people should go to his website, straightmoneyanalysis.com. He writes a newsletter, which just came out this like a week ago. And this is the first level of being educated. Now, I know, Mr. Meyer, before the break, we were talking a lot of overview. But, you know, again, I want to go tease apart what's been said in the media. Ron Paul, when he ran, talked a lot about auditing the Federal Reserve. But I'm not sure people really know what that is. Can you give us a little brief history, if you can, of what is the Fed and how did it become so powerful?
Well, simply, the Federal Reserve System is the central bank of the United States. It regulates the U.S. monetary and financial systems. The Federal Reserve is comprised of a central governmental agency in Washington, D.C., as you know, Elena. The Board of Governors has 12 regional Federal Reserve banks in major cities throughout the United States, and it regulates, as I said earlier, monetary and financial systems. That's what the Federal Reserve is.
The way the Constitution is set up, doesn't Congress actually have the power of the purse and the power to create money?
Yes, they do.
And they've abrogated that to the Federal Reserve. That's my take on it. So we're actually spending money we're paying them to create money, which makes no sense. So technically, that is the beginning, in my opinion, and I could be wrong, you know, correct me, of our government outsourcing itself to another entity that's not us, right?
No, it's not.
So we're really, overall, if you really think about it, at the whim of an unelected body. I mean, who are these people? Who elects them? Where do they come from?
Well, these people are elected by the Board of Governors of the 12 regional Federal Reserve banks in the United States. That's the answer to that.
So there's no Americans associated or voting or knowing who these guys are and what their motivations are, technically.
They're appointed within the system of the Federal Reserve.
So when they start messing around with interest rates and raising and lowering them, how does that really affect us as individuals in the country?
Well, you know, we have the lowest interest rates since the Depression of the 1930s. And I think when you look at low interest rates and you look at the ability of the economy to certainly have benefited from the massive amount of liquidity that's been pumped into the system, it's been a failure. But I think when you look more importantly globally and you look at all the central banks of the world and you look at them all pumping simultaneously massive amounts of capital into the global economies, and you take a look at the slowdowns that we've had in Japan, certainly the slowdown we've witnessed in China recently, and more importantly, the ever-growing economy of India as well. The massive amount of liquidity that's been pumped by all these central banks of the world have failed, I believe, to bring the economies of these countries back to their prior state.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't believe the massive amount of liquidity pumped into the system has been able to accomplish what these central banks of the world truly believed it would.
And so when they're talking about now to try to juice the economy again with negative interest rates, what does that actually mean?
Well, I think, again, when you talk about the negative interest rate policies we've witnessed in countries similarly, Japan, Denmark, Sweden, Switzerland, as you know, the ECB bank for 18 nations that used the euro is using negative interest rates as well.
Mm-hmm.
What it basically means is you pay the bank to hold your money, that you don't draw any interest on your money, that the rate of inflation is higher than a rate of interest, which is negative, being paid on your savings and or deposits in the bank. That's what it means, Elena.
So it's costing you to put your money in the bank. They're taking
your
money. Now, let's revisit, if we can, when we did the major bailout.
Okay.
How am I going to ask this question? Was it a wise move to give money to the banking system? I think the caveat was they're supposed to be more loose with their lending. What was the reason that we did that, and what were we supposed to get from it?
Well, as you know, the reason was to save the troubled banks and save the banking system. And initially, we were told $800 billion would turn the situation around.
Mm-hmm.
And as we know, $4 trillion later, a lot of these banks are still in the same difficulty they were before. The money never found its way into the small businesses that were certainly starving for cash at the time that banking crisis began in 2008. And as you know, we had a stock market that topped out at 14,100 and bottomed in March of 2008 at 6,470. And since we've seen quantitative easing 1, 2, 3, and possibly maybe even quantitative easing number 4 down the road at some point, the market went from 6,470 to recently around 18,500. So the money went into the banks, went into the corporations that, instead of certainly putting it back into the economy, turned around, bought their own stock, and drove the market to what I think is unrealistic valuations. That's exactly what in my mind took place, and that's what I think people fail to realize and want to understand.
If you could make policy, what would you do to try to reverse that? How could you give them less incentive to hoard?
Well, I think, you know, banks have to be compelled to lend once again to the credit worthy. I think there's many businesses, as you alluded to, that are starving for capital, that would like to expand, and certainly are able to do so if financing is put in place.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we have to see money work its way back through the system the way it always has in the past, and work its way into small businesses that'll put it back into the community by hiring people and allowing them to certainly support the small businesses and allowing them to grow. You know, it's a very simple concept if you sit down and you think about it for a minute. It worked in the past and it will work again. We just have to get back again, as I said, to the basics.
And I think from the corporate standpoint, not stop being so greedy about things. I mean, we've seen, at least from my perspective, this has been a commingling or hooking up of what's going on economically and social justice, whatever they want to call it. The rhetoric doesn't really jibe with what's going on. And there's been a real demonization of capitalism, as if that's the reason that this happened. But is this capitalism or is this cronyism or fascism, where the government and the corporate interests have aligned and they're working together to keep it going?
I think the simple answer to that, Elena, is it's all of them.
Okay. Well, what's the capitalist part of it?
Well, the capitalist part of it is they turn a profit, and that's why they're in business. They don't care how they turn a profit.
Okay.
I think you've got to put into perspective, promises are made to be broken and lies are made to be upheld.
That puts it in perspective, all right.
You never heard that one?
No, I've never heard that one. It's a new one. But hey, it works. So basically, right, they're using the government to create the infrastructure they can make maximum profit and not run afoul of the law. Is that a way?
Precise.
Okay, there you go. So it's the same game plan no matter what you're in. For medicine, that means whoever crafted the law that makes mandates awesome, you know, so you have to buy their product. Their product is not at all controlled by the consumer. They just make stuff up and they make an artificial price. They do everything they can to suck as much money out of the patient and the doctors they possibly can, and they still get more from the government. That's exactly what you just described on our side. It's sick. And so from a standpoint,
that's why it cannot continue.
I agree.
You know, people think this can go on forever. Quite honestly, we're at the end of the line. This isn't going to go any further, at least in my humble belief. That's the way, again, I see it. This is an ending rather than a new beginning.
Well, what you're talking about?
Because no one can afford to be part of the system anymore.
Well, that's a good point. If patients can't afford the insurance premiums for the Affordable Care Act, then
no,
you can't.
Can.
No, you can't get blood from a stone. There's only so they can't pay the fines. What are they going to do? And the hospital's not going to have patients coming into them. Doctors are. Yeah, I can see how this is unsustainable. And this is, if you use it as the cookie cutter or the example, then you're saying this is the same thing in the construction industry?
Absolutely.
Wow. So what that really means is we're heading towards a cliff, towards a collapse. Are you saying that?
We're heading towards a crisis, and it's been long postponed and long overdue, and we're going to have to face the day of reckoning. You know, when you take a look at the tremendous amount of debt that's been built up, and you take a look at the tremendous amount of profits that have been generated by a very unfair economic system, I mean, it's no wonder when you look at the devastation and the pain and certainly the problems that have been caused by all this. You have the people that benefited by using the system, and you have people who've been punished by being part of the system.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why this system, as we know it now, I believe is unsustainable.
On that note, let's take a break. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
This is Dr. George from Peachtree ENT Center. We've won patient care awards and have the highest patient recommendations because we believe in practicing medicine the old-fashioned way. Practicing good medicine is based in listening to the patient and making a care plan that is individual. The best medical care is given when there is a strong doctor-patient relationship built on mutual trust and respect. At Peachtree ENT Center, we believe in taking care of the whole patient because healing is more than writing a prescription. Whether you have problems hearing, have frequent throat or sinus infections, from the time you call our office and speak to a real person, you'll be treated as an individual and not as an ailment. During your visit, you will not be rushed and all your questions will be answered. When possible, natural treatments will be recommended to fix the problem. If surgery is recommended, cost-effective, minimally invasive treatment for snoring, sleep apnea, or sinus problems will be offered because Peachtree ENT Center is where patient care counts.
Hello, I'm Dr. Mike Karuchak. Have you ever wondered what doctors talk about amongst themselves? If you do, join us on the Doctor's Lounge and hear the doctors' conversations amongst themselves. Join me and my co-host, Dr. Hal Schertz, every Thursday morning, 8 to 9 a.m.
With all the back and forth in today's politics, it seems as though the Constitution gets lost in the mix. If you want to brush up on your Constitution, then join Michael Conley every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. for the show Our Constitution on AmericasWebRadio.com.
Affordable health insurance was the promise of Obamacare, but for many, the government mandate caused more problems than it solved. This is Dr. Elena George from Medicine on Call, and I want to tell you about a truly affordable alternative allowed under Obamacare, Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare bypasses doctor and hospital panels, giving you the freedom to choose. And with a maximum of $500 out-of-pocket per person and 100% coverage up to $1 million per year per occurrence, you can rest assured knowing you and your family are protected. Coverage starts as low as $107 per month and also includes dental, vision, pharmacy, and holistic care. Liberty HealthShare puts you back in charge of your health. Visit them online at libertyoncall.org. Again, for a true affordable alternative to Obamacare, visit libertyoncall.org or call toll-free 1-800-714-6993 today.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. We're talking today with Mr. Joseph Meyer. You should check out his website, straightmoneyanalysis.com, and educate yourself. I can't say that enough because knowledge is power. You know, we've painted a real picture of what's been going on. And in this segment, we're going to start talking about how we, you know, what we need to look for to get out of this. So my first question to you, Joseph, is we know that we're teetering. What are signs that people need to look out for to know, hey, this is imminent, this is a problem, we need to handle our business?
Well, I think when you speak, the average American medium household income remains below the levels of 1999.
Mm-hmm.
I think we have to put in perspective that since 2009, 95% of all income gain has gone to the richest 1% of the U.S. population. I think we have to put in perspective, we now have over 50 million Americans on food stamps, with people earning more in many states being on welfare rather than seeking meaningful employment. If that's not a wake-up call for you, I don't know what would be.
Yeah, when you put it that way, yeah, you're right. I mean, you get more money by government subsidies or some sort of government program than you do actually getting a job. That's a problem. But all these programs were put into place in the last, 8 years? You know, extending the benefits for unemployment, like for a couple of years, I mean, or maybe 3 years or so. It became really long. Like,
yes, you
were getting paid, and it made a peculiar incentive that it was easier to sit on your butt than it was to go out and get a job. Then it became, well, you need 3 or 4 jobs just to make what you were making beforehand. So, you know, this is a medical show, so I want to tie Obamacare into this. Do you think that had, I mean, it's a loaded question, positive or negative effect on our economy?
Well, I think it's had a negative effect. I think when you put in perspective, and I don't know if you're aware of this statistic, Walmart is now the largest employer in 19 states, and the second largest employer after Walmart is the state educational system. Do you know that?
No. Really?
That's why you read Straight Money Analysis.
So Walmart, huh? How interesting. So that...
Let me name the 19 states to
please.
Put it even in more perspective. Alabama, Arizona, Arkansas, Florida, Georgia, Illinois, Kentucky, Louisiana, Mississippi, Missouri, Montana, Ohio, Oklahoma, South Carolina, Tennessee, Texas, Virginia, West Virginia, and Wyoming. Those are the 19 states. Do you know what state they have the most employees in? Texas, 166,000. And the state with the least employment working in Walmart is Wyoming, 4,600 employees.
So all of these Fortune 500 companies that wield this kind of power, I'm sure Walmart does too, but looking at that segment of our employer base, they really don't hire as many people for the power that they wield. They're not providing the jobs if Walmart's number one, huh?
No, they're not.
That's amazing. So let's talk about solutions. What can people do realistically to protect themselves?
Well, I think we all have to look deep inside ourselves, and we have to define what our talent is. I have a very simple definition of talent, and I'd like to share it with you.
Please.
I believe your talent is anything you do consistently on an extraordinary level. That's how I define anyone's talent. I think it's a very broad definition, but I think it's appropriate.
So do what your God-given gift is. If you can find what that is and do it, then that's what you should be doing.
Absolutely.
And I was talking to my producer in the break. You know, I think the way out of this is to withdraw your consent and start becoming your own small business, so you're an entrepreneur. Is that the antidote for this, where you just stop feeding this beast and you generate your own wealth and your own value?
I think you have to generate your own wealth. I think we all have talent. I think there's a talent and a market for the things we do, and we do very well.
Mm-hmm.
I think in some instances people are going to have to get additional job skills and or retrain on job skills which need to be improved. But I think you basically have to move away from the economic system, the economic model that we have, in which that we live and work within, because it's a failure.
So for me, that translates into having your own microeconomies where you deal with people, like for physicians, for example. There's a lot of doctors now moving out of the mindset of, I need to be an employee, I need to get bigger. It's about being leaner and meaner, having a direct relationship with your patient, that you deal in cash amongst each other or between each other, and you start finding other doctors who are like-minded and create your own parallel systems. Is that the kind of thing you're talking about?
Yes, I am.
So if everybody did this in whatever they do, if that's a, you know, supermarkets that, you know, that are local, and I've seen some of these videos where Walmart comes in, they put a mom-and-pop, you know, market out of business, and they've just lost cheaper, well, I should say it's not even cheaper, it's more high quality, because it's actually, you've gotten cheaper, but the quality's gone down in a lot of these places. But I think it comes down to what you just said. You have to really start valuing yourself. If you want to pay $5 for something that's going to fall apart in a day, as opposed to hiring somebody from, you know, going to your local I guess vendor, whatever you want to put it, and have your neighbor be the person that gets the money as opposed to some offshore entity, that's how you start making a difference, isn't it?
That's exactly. I couldn't have said it any better, Elena.
Well, I mean, it's just a mindset change, isn't it? It's, I take responsibility. I'm not going to depend on someone giving me a freebie or getting something on the cheap because it looks like a good deal. I think that's what we got. I used to talk about this quite a bit, that people wanted to get the cheapest thing, and Walmart sprung up everywhere, and it was like some sort of badge of honor to get something really cheap and get a good deal. But there was no thought to the consequence of it. Now I think we're reaping what we sowed, actually, over the past, 20 years or so. And the consumer drove this, didn't we?
Well, the consumer played a very meaningful part in where we have now finally ended up. And I think, and again, this is my own humble opinion, people will always pay for quality, and they'll always pay for service, and they'll always pay for true expertise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm writing the newsletter 7 years, but I've been part of these markets 50. hard to believe. I've been in these markets, you know, five decades, but I have. Got involved in these markets 1966. I was 19 years old. I recently turned age 70. So I've seen the good times. I've seen the bad times. I know what works and I know what doesn't. And I think when you take a look at what's going to be needed to turn this country around, well, I think if you wait for big government to turn it around, it's going to take a number of years. And again, we get back to what you just spoke of. We've got to look deep inside each and every individual, define what your talent is, define what your market is, and go out and capture it. It's not something that's going to be easy, but it's something that can be done.
Mm-hmm.
No one can ever take away from you your talent. They can take away everything else, but they can't take away your knowledge and your experience. And I think, again, that's a word people are willing to pay for. Do you have the talent? Do you have the experience? Do you have the expertise to make a difference? I think that answer lies within each and every one of us on an individual basis.
I couldn't have said it better. And I think that would be the way that everybody can take their power back and stop this onslaught that's coming. So we already established that if you can open up your own, be an entrepreneur, you know, expand your talent, know what it is and go for it. That's one side of it. On the nuts and bolts side, something more, I guess, standard. What about gold or silver? I hear a lot about that people should start to invest in that. Is that something that people should actually do?
Well, I think we're going to see a repricing of all asset classes around the world. We're going to see a repricing, as I've said many times, in the currencies in which they're represented. I think when you look at the long history on gold and silver, it's always done two things all throughout history. It's been a storage of wealth and a hedge against inflation, and nothing through history that has happened prior or will happen in the future will change that fact. You know, if you go back through history, 1 ounce of gold bought the Dow twice. It bought in 1932 and it bought it again in 1980. I believe in the rule of threes, and I think at some point an ounce of gold will equal the value of the Dow once again in our lifetime. Doesn't mean it's today or tomorrow, but I think it's inevitable and it'll happen. But I think on a percentage basis moving forward, silver is the cheap man's gold, and I think silver on a basis moving forward will actually outperform gold. So I think the answer to your question, do you own gold and silver? Are they good investments? I think the answer is absolutely yes, they are.
Okay. So let's talk about land. Is that something that people should put their wealth into in order to maintain what they have?
Well, you know, on real estate, I've been bearish for quite some time. I still believe housing is very overpriced in lieu of what the average American can certainly earn in the workplace and afford. Honestly, I think it's still cheaper to rent than own, and I think when we finally see the reset in asset classes, as I spoke to earlier, real estate will go down with stocks and bonds and other collectibles as well. You know, land can be a good investment, but when you talk about the risk associated with land, it can be very great, and you can tie up money in land and be forced to hold it for many, many years with no return.
Mm-hmm.
So right now, looking at the landscape of the economic and financial world, I question whether or not I would want to be a buyer of land, Elena, I really do.
Okay. And we know stocks are really volatile, but if you wanted to stay in stocks, is there any particular type or class of stock that you would recommend or versus bonds?
Well, I think you want to be very defensive. You want to be in stocks that can certainly resist the long overdue correction in the equity markets that I think is ahead of us. Two areas in the Dow I'll share with your listening audience that I think this market could fall down to in the next bear market. I think at a minimum we could go down to the 2007 highs right around 14,100, and if that didn't contain the bear market, we would then go down to the 2000 highs around 11,780. But you've got to look in the market for what we call growth and income stocks that can certainly resist the decline, as I said earlier, couple of names that I'll throw out there of quality companies that I think could be defensive: Philip Morris, AT&T, Coca-Cola, Clorox, Procter & Gamble, Kellogg Company, General Mills. Companies like this that make products that we need, you know, irrespective of what the economic conditions are, people still need these products and buy them and use them.
That's an excellent point. So, like things like tech stocks, maybe the first to take a hit because there's things that are not needed. Okay. Because they always make them sound so sexy. You know, you just need to be at the next level and what's coming, and that may not be the wise long-term thing to do from what you just said.
Well, I think in the market right now, honestly, the upside is very limited and the downside is very great. I think you've got people taking risk in their 401k and in their IRA accounts that are certainly unjustified and certainly unrealistic. I think you want to protect your capital at all costs. You want to take money off the table. You want to raise some cash and you want to prepare for lower prices.
Mm-hmm.
I did say in the recent show that I did on Coast to Coast with George Norrie that I thought there was an outside possibility the Dow could trade to levels around 20,000 and the S&P around 2350. I still think it's a possibility, but I have to give it less of a probability than I did when I did that show with George about 5 weeks ago, Elena.
Things are changing fast then. On that note, let's take our last break. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
Affordable health insurance was the promise of Obamacare, but for many, the government mandate caused more problems than it solved. This is Dr. Elena George from Medicine on Call, and I want to tell you about a truly affordable alternative allowed under Obamacare, Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare bypasses doctor and hospital panels, giving you the freedom to choose. And with a maximum of $500 out-of-pocket per person and 100% coverage up to $1 million per year per occurrence, you can rest assured knowing you and your family are protected. Coverage starts as low as $107 per month and also includes dental, vision, pharmacy, and holistic care. Liberty HealthShare puts you back in charge of your health. Visit them online at libertyoncall.org. Again, for a true affordable alternative to Obamacare, visit libertyoncall.org or call toll-free 1-800-714-6993 today.
Are your health insurance premiums going up? You are not alone. Visit us at ObamacareWatch.org to understand why and what you can do to get us back on the right track. This is Grace Marie Turner, president of the Galen Institute. Visit us at ObamacareWatch.org.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
It's that time of year again. If you suffer from itchy eyes, sneezing, a constant runny nose, sinus headaches, or an increase in asthma symptoms, and you're tired of using allergy medicine, maybe it's time to stop putting a Band-Aid on the problem. Peachtree ENT Center believes in treating the problem instead of masking the symptom. We are pleased to offer an innovative alternative that can free you from this routine. Sublingual immunotherapy is a safe, easy, and effective way to treat allergies to food and environmental allergens for you and your family. Imagine placing drops under your tongue to treat allergies. No shots, no office visits with time off from work, and freedom from needing daily allergy medication. Just think, next year, you can actually enjoy being outdoors. About an hour of your time is all it takes to change the quality of your life. Remember, Peachtree ENT Center is where patient care counts.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. I just want to thank you again for coming on my show because this has been an education for me. I hope my listeners also feel the same way. You've just opened my eyes and everybody who's listening to the possibility of what if we stop thinking the same way? What if we take our power back? What if we decide we're going to run our own show? It runs so much better. We don't have to deal with what you just described, a fake system that's propped up by ridiculousness and lies, and we're all falling in for this at this point. I think it can't be sustained. They can't even make it sound good anymore. And we talked about stocks, we talked about land and gold and silver. What about the banks?
The best investment anyone can ever make, and I think this is an important statement, invest in yourself.
Yep.
Invest in your talent, invest in your ability, invest in your expertise, and invest in the truth of who you are as a person. That's what you invest in.
I love that. I can't say it any better. And when you take a chance on yourself and invest in yourself, really, you can't let yourself down, honestly, because you're the one driving the show. It works. You may have a couple of bumps, but if you work harder, it works. I've been practicing for 15, 16 years now against the odds. And I've no interest in letting anything in this system take me out or take me out of my sweet spot of being able to get up every morning and do what I love to do, which you just described and what I'm sure that you do as well. That's what people need to get to. It's not about what you can't do. It's what your potential. And the last thing I wanted to...
Ask yourself a simple question.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you want to lie to yourself?
That's a good question.
Think about it for a minute.
Yeah?
If you're unhappy with who you are, you're unhappy with what you're doing, you're unhappy as to the reasons why you're doing it, why do you continue to lie to yourself and tell yourself there's no choice and I have to do it? Why?
That's a great question. I think it's maybe fear. That's what people, unfortunately, they want you to have that as your undercurrent. Because if you live in fear, you're less likely to want to make a change, and you get stuck. You don't want to go left or right. You just want to hunker down. And then you become easily manipulated because of that. I mean, take a chance.
You know, all through my career, and it's been a long one, and I've learned a lot, and we've all made mistakes. And the one thing that I did learn that I'd like to pass on and share with your listening audience is simply this. You never fight change, you go with it. And people fight change instead of going with it. And when you fight change instead of going with it, the only thing you do is make it more difficult for yourself.
I think that's a great statement. And
it only took 50 years, Elena, to learn all this.
I think, you know, I'm with you. That's what I've been trying to do for my listening audience and for myself. I think this whole, for medicine, Obamacare is an opportunity for people to unhook their practices and hook their mindset of this is the only way to do it. Go back to basics. We're fortunate as physicians. We do have a skill. We do have a talent. We know what that is. We need to start using it again. And if you're in construction or you're, you know, if you're a beautician, whatever you do, instead of apologizing, which is what they kind of want us to do, apologize for being an individual. Apologize for actually being good at something. Everybody's supposed to be the same now. You're supposed to hide your talent. Everybody gets a trophy. I've never seen anything like this. I didn't grow up with this mindset. You're supposed to share what you have, inspire other people so they can find their talent and do what they do. Now you're sexist, racist, you want something, you know, you're taking from somebody else. It's a complete reversal of what the natural state of an individual is, isn't it?
Well, you know, I've said many times, sometimes in life we want a better life for people than they want for themselves. And we can't change that, and we can't make them want to have a better life than the one they currently have unless they're ready to certainly enjoy that life if we can give it to them and or help them achieve it. But we've got to get back to the individuality of people. We've got to get back to the individual once again making a difference, I think. Again, irrespective of whatever field of endeavor, you know, can you make a difference? Will you make a difference? And I think we have many people that are now ready and able to step up to that challenge and accept it and make a difference. And again, that's what I think is the future of America as we move forward.
So all of this movement that we've seen towards becoming part of a group, collectivism, part of a whole, subjugating or abrogating your own individual talents, your aspirations, because somehow it's unseemly. That is definitely the opposite of the way we should be moving from what you described.
Well, I think if you go back and you study where this collectivism has been put to practice all through history, it's been a failure.
Mm-hmm.
What makes anyone think it'll succeed now and here? I don't see it.
I certainly don't. And it's always the same thing. It's one smaller group controlling the larger group and telling them they should like having nothing and scraping and, you know, or making them, it's like some sort of mind control, you know, making you feel as if you've got a problem even though you have a reason to have a problem or complain about something.
Well, you know, we continue to focus on what we can't do, but very few people focus on what we can do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we have to look at it as individuals at the things we can do, and we have to certainly look to the things we can do and go ahead and do them.
And that doesn't involve you asking permission for anybody to do that, does
it?
No. That's the key. Absolutely the key. Now, before you go, I have one question for you.
Sure.
Banks versus credit unions.
Okay.
Is there a difference? Should people be taking their money and putting them in a credit union because of less?
Well, I think credit unions on balance are safer than banks. I think they have a much different loan criteria and different threshold of risk. And I think they certainly make a lot of sense on many different levels of banking and certainly finance, and I think people should look into them. You know, each and every one is different, has different rules and certainly parameters that they allow members to become part of it, but it's a way to certainly be part of what's going on in the financial sector and certainly be away from the bank, so I think people should look into it.
Okay. On the last minute that we have, anything that you want to say that I didn't ask you?
Well, I think we're in an extraordinary time. I think we're in unprecedented, uncharted waters financially. We write about it in every issue of the newsletter, as you know. And out of respect to you and what you do and the difference I think you're trying to make in the community, anyone becomes a subscriber to Straight Money Analysis through your show and introduction. We'll give them a one-year subscription at the six-month subscription price. We'll save them $110 on the one-year subscription. And I'll also include, again, out of respect to you, Elena, some back issues of the newsletter. We'll give you the March, June, and September 2016 issue, and we'll start your one-year subscription from the month of September. Very easy to sign up for the newsletter. Just go to the straightmoneyanalysis.com website. We've got a secure PayPal terminal. You can sign up online, and if people want to see a sample of the newsletter, there's a full sample issue of the newsletter on the Straight Money Analysis website under Sample Issue and Newsletter. It's a December 2015 issue, and that's what they can expect to receive in every issue of the newsletter I write. Mm-hmm. If anyone needs to speak to me personally, we'll always take your call. My number here, 386-677-8642.
Well, I can't say it any better. Thank you so much. It's an honor and a blessing to have you on my show, and I hope you'll come back in the future.
Look forward to certainly visiting with you and your listening audience again, and I want to thank you, Elena, and thank Medicine on Call for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Joe. That's Joseph Meyer, and thank you for listening to Medicine on Call.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.